For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
To seeing our listeners tomorrow out in Rockville, North Bethesda.
North of Bethesda.
Right.
Northern. I don't know.
Sports and Social Bethesda, it's called, in Rockville.
From Bethesda!
2 to 6:30 tomorrow. Live show. Friday field trip, Grant and Danny. I wonder how terrible traffic's going to be for me. So I'm going to be leaving there to go to the Capital One Arena to see the Caps and the Penguins 7:30 puck drop tomorrow.
You'll be all right. You'll be all right.
You sure?
Nope.
It seemed, looking at it today, it seemed like it was a bit of a hike. Because like, do I go through the city, down through Tenleytown all the way down? Or is that a around the beltway situation?
So let's start planning this out, you and me tomorrow. We'll take a commercial break in that late 5 o'clock hour. You and me will look at it, and I'll give you options.
I'm a little nervous.
I'll give you. You will have options. It'll be like,
I don't miss puck drop.
You and I both know that.
Daddy don't miss that puck hitting that ice.
I'm gonna overlook that. You just called yourself daddy. Then I'm gonna go past that and talk about it. We'll get you your directions. You'll get there. We'll figure this out.
Alex Smith is on the show in 1 hour at 6 o'clock. Excited for that. Tomorrow we've got our guy Charles Davis on the show to help us preview the Commanders and the Steelers this weekend. I am the most excited for a Commanders game I've been in a long, long time. And I think my reason is just, A, it's really, really good teams. In fact, see if we can find this out. There's a lot of things for the research department to work on today that we're throwing at you. When is the last time this deep into a season a Washington team has been 6-2 or better playing against a team that is 6-2 or better? That's going to be tough to find. But obviously, they have not been 7-2.
I was going to say they haven't been that, so there's only a couple years to choose from.
2008, they were 6-2, and 96, they were 7-2. Otherwise, 6-2 hasn't existed for them. But to play a team that's really good when you're really good in Week 10 or later at home just hasn't happened. They've had their hot stretches where they might make the playoffs against some good teams at the end of years, but I think that's a different situation than what we're talking about, which is in almost every power rankings done for the NFL right now, two teams in the top 10 are meeting in Landover, Maryland on Sunday. When is the last time that's been the case in mid-November?
You got to think back. I mean, I don't have it on top of my head.
The early 90s, maybe?
Probably. I mean, you're looking at that Dallas winner-take-all game in 2012. Doesn't exactly fit the criteria. I mean, because obviously that's at the end of December. But that caliber of game here, where two teams have playoff-caliber records and are playing.
Those two teams would not both be in the top 10.
It was win and go in, exactly. Yep.
And so right now, I'm just pulling up the first random NFL power rankings I find, and it's Eric Edholm on NFL.com. I just Googled power rankings. He's got the Lions. Any problem with that?
Nope.
The Chiefs?
Nope.
The Bills?
Nope.
The Ravens, 1-4.
Mm-hmm.
Washington's 5th.
There you go.
Pittsburgh Steelers, 9th. He is saying that two of the 9 best teams in the NFL will be on the field. That never happens when I'm going to games this late into a season over there, ever. Darius, you seem like you figured something out.
You're not going to believe this. That 2008 year, when we were 6-2,
okay,
we played the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Well, that's when it all fell apart.
They were also 6-2.
That was a primetime game.
Yeah. So, yeah, they were 6-2 going against a 6-2 team that week in 2008.
All right, I will take it. That's a great answer. Thank you.
This is all flooding back to me now. Celine Dion's
that was such a fraudulent 6-2 team. It's going to sound like I'm dismissing that.
No, they were.
But it was such a fake 6-2 team that I didn't even view that as that kind of game. But I guess at the time, it certainly was. If you go back, this station didn't exist, by the way. There was no sports talk on the FM dial in Washington, D.C., which is hard to fathom. But yeah, 2008, your boy was in college. I was at that game. It was the terrible towel takeover game.
That's what I was going to say. It's the Monday Zorn night year. Takeover where the it was. The, I think it was the. How do I quantify this? That was the first time. I think it was impossible to hide some of the damage that had been done to this fan base. Like that Monday night takeover on national television where people tune in, the raucous atmosphere of RFK, like that was still in people's minds and everyone was in on Washington, the then Redskins. And when the whole stadium was Pittsburgh and they had their towels, like, wait, is this in Pittsburgh? And it wasn't. That was the first time I think there was no pretending anymore. We're like, we got a season ticket waiting list and everybody loves us still. We're the same. And everyone knew that it was a lie at that point. That was a seminal moment.
That was this week, by the way.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, it was right before
Monday, November 3rd.
Like election day, I feel like as well. But it was this week in 2008 and they got trounced. And what I remember about that game is that Ben Roethlisberger got hurt. Didn't finish the game. So, in fact, they got the good fortune of, if you could say that, sadly, the starting quarterback of the other team getting hurt. Their offense was struggling. And D.C. native Byron Leftwich
came in. Oh, he carved them up.
And he ate their lunch. Like, Roethlisberger was actually really struggling, hadn't been playing well. And all I remember about that game was Leftwich came on, and you thought, they're going to beat the Steelers. Jason Campbell had not thrown a pick all year going into that game, I think. He threw a few interceptions.
He had two.
But Byron Leftwich was coming in, and he was about to lose the game. And then he lit it up. Willie Parker was their running back, probably went crazy.
Good Willie Parker pull, 21 for 70.
And that it was over at that point.
Do you remember Leftwich's statistics?
No clue. I just remember he played in this. I mean, he wouldn't have thrown it a lot, but he was like no incompletions, and he threw touchdowns.
7 of 10 for $1.29 in a tutty. He was comfortable.
Only one touchdown?
Yeah.
Oh, I remember him like. I remember in my mind, it was like 11 of 12 for 200 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Other than that, that 2018 team led by Alex Smith, that team was 6-3 headed into the matchup with the Texans where Alex Smith would go on to break his leg.
Yes.
That Texans team was also 6-3. So that's the next closest, yeah. I guess.
So you know why I think I dismissed these is they were like that 6-3 team was on a bridge to nowhere. And respectfully, I mean, we got Alex Smith coming up at 6 o'clock. So I guess I should hedge when I say that. But like they couldn't score. They couldn't really move the ball. Their running back was 100-year-old Adam Peterson, I'm sure. Adam Peters was their running back before he was their GM.
That's how good he was.
Adrian Peterson at running back. And Smith, in an offense that wasn't particularly explosive or interesting, or they couldn't get chunk yards. Like that was a really pedestrian team in a bad offense, probably, if you looked at the numbers.
Oh, definitely was bad. Not even maybe. It was a bad offense. They couldn't crack 20 points.
This is so different. I'm going to look up the stat that the junkies were citing today. My wife actually called me about it. I got a text from my wife out of the blue. Think about how random this text would be to get. She goes, when are you going to have Warrington Sharp on your show? I'm like, first of all, my wife knows who Warren Sharp is. Second, who's Warrington Sharp? And third, what is happening right now? And I was like, what? And she's like, Warrington Sharp, you have him on your show. And I'm like, she's like, my phone auto-corrected it to Warrington Sharpie. And I changed the Sharpie and it didn't change.
And left Warrington. And left the city of Warrington.
But he had a stat that said, essentially, when these things happen, a team goes to the Super Bowl. I think this is the one they were citing. The Commanders offense. You ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
49% of drives reach the red zone. Which is hilarious. Half their drives get to the red zone. Number one in the NFL since at least 2000. That's dating back to the greatest show on turf, Rams. 61% of their drives score points. Number one in the NFL since 2000. Again, we're talking about 25 football seasons. The Commanders' offense has the highest percentage of drives getting to the red zone and the highest percentage of drives that result in points in 25 seasons of football, 32 offenses every year. He said, and guess what? Over 50% of the teams in the top 10 in percentage of drives to reach the red zone through week 9 made the Super Bowl that year.
Damn.
Over half of the teams in the top 10 in percentage of drives to reach the red zone through week 9 made the Super Bowl that year. And when he's saying top 10, he's not saying in that year. He is saying the all-time top 10 teams in percentage of drives. So the 2024 Washington Commanders 18 Rams, 18 Saints, 07 Patriots. By the way, that's Randy Moss and Tom Brady. 07 Colts, 06 Colts, 18 Chiefs. Over half of those teams got to the Super Bowl. Washington has that resume right now. So I am juxtaposing this authentic, legitimate, awesome offense against the Zornian Redskins and against the Alex Smith, Jay Gruden Redskins, and they just weren't as good as this group.
No, and it's not the same, and that's okay. It doesn't besmirch what anybody else did or didn't do.
That was via Warrant and Sharpie.
Warrant and Sharpie. When he comes on again, we got to tell him about that.
Yes, we should.
Like, you know, some people know you as Warren Sharp. Others, Warrant and Sharpie.
Why did your phone correct that? That's also interesting.
Because if you capitalize Warren, maybe you're looking for that. Like, you live in Virginia, maybe it's like looking for the Warrington. Sharpie, I couldn't help you there. Like, if it's a capital S in Sharp, like, let the capital, like, the formal name stand.
She's artsy, though, so she probably talks about Sharpies in text.
Oh, she's artistic. Possible. She is artistic, yeah.
She's a very good artist.
Mm-hmm. Can I give you one more crazy parallel between the 2008 game and this game?
All out. Parallel it up.
2000, and this is courtesy of my guy, Jalen. He hit me up and gave me this information. 2008, they wore all burgundy in that game.
Oh, God.
This weekend, we're wearing all burgundy.
Yeah, I don't know. Why are they doing that, by the way? Enough with the all burgundy. It's not even the right burgundy, right? I mean, yep. Do we have to do this? I'm not an all burgundy guy.
Nobody is. Nah, I'm not saying nobody. There are a couple adults who like it.
White on white, yes. Mm-hmm. White on burgundy, yes. Not the new one, but the old one. By the way, they should go back to the 1991 colors from when they last won a championship. Burgundy on white, sure. I even, Danny, cover your ears, earmuffs.
Oh,
you can say whatever you want.
Don't say this.
You can say whatever you want. I'll take the blacks over the burgundy on burgundy.
You know what? Over the burgundy on the burgundy, over the run on run, I would take the black jerseys that have nothing to do with the team.
Now, I would not say that if they were wearing the correct color burgundy. Like, when they first ever wore the burgundy on burgundy, it might have even been that Steelers game, honestly. They did it on a couple of primetime games back in the early 2000s. It might have been the first time they ever wore that look, if I remember correctly. Regardless, that version, which is just the actual color that they are, still didn't think it was a great look. It's kind of pajamas-like, but that's way better than not the correct burgundy, burgundy on burgundy. Because they currently have a different color burgundy than the old burgundy.
That's right. It's very Arizona State third alternate uniform. This current pajama look, where the same on the top as the bottom, that's the worst thing you can do. Like, uniform-wise, that's the one seed. The two seed is wear a jersey that has nothing to do with your team or your colors or your history or anything, which is the black on black. That's not the worst look in the world. It's just you for the first few seconds, if you don't know anybody, you're like, oh, the Steelers are playing in Washington for some reason, and this would happen to be. But it's wrong. If they could somehow find the right ones and we could start doing the color combos again. But again, the only thing you can do same color is the white on white, as long as you got those burgundy socks or enough of those accent marks where it looks clean. Like, I think of the Sean Taylor era where they had the white on white that looked just so awesome. But this I'm looking at this John Allen jersey. It's like a USC freshman autographed jersey. It's wrong.
While we're reminiscing, and that was not the goal of this segment, but before we move on, I got into my feels a little bit yesterday. So what was the first time you ever went to a Redskins game? And I say Redskins because that's what it was at the time, but maybe you didn't go to one when they were the Redskins. I don't know. But for you personally, I'm assuming you did.
The years run together, but I want to say it was like 85 or 86.
So you don't distinctly remember the game that you first went to?
No, I saw them play the Minnesota Vikings at home.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the first time, I've talked about this game on the show a few times. The first time I ever went to a game, and the only time I ever went to FedEx Field, was that Boomer Esiason overtime game against the Arizona Cardinals, 37-34 Arizona, one of the wildest games in pretty much the team's history, going back and forth with missed field goals in overtime. I didn't realize it until we had Ken Harvey on, and I was doing some of my research yesterday to talk to Harvey. But Danny, that was basically this week 28 years ago. So your boy, as a 8-year-old with his dad, went to RFK Stadium for the only time I ever went to that stadium to see what was the 7-2. Sound familiar? 7-2 Redskins in 1996 play the Arizona Cardinals at home. It was this game.
Wow.
As an 8-year-old kid at RFK Stadium, the first and only time I ever got to go to that stadium. And I was looking up the stats from the game. I've told you before, The reason I originally brought it up was because Boomer comes on our show sometimes. Mm-hmm. And Boomer Esiason threw for a record 522 yards that day. By the way, 3 touchdowns and 4 picks. You don't see that very often.
The game was different then.
Gus Frerotte threw for 212, a tutty, and a pick. Terry Allen ran for a 124. My guy Mark Logan ripped off a 36-yard run, had a touchdown. Michael Westbrook was involved. The only really legit memory of the actual game, other than the game-winning field goal, that was in my end zone, because I was sitting down low toward the end zone, and I didn't have a good view, and a lot of stuff I couldn't see. But I distinctly remember Brian Mitchell fielding kickoffs at about the goal line right in front of me. And I can smell RFK. It's so weird how memory works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like certain things about that day. I remember walking by and seeing certain players on the sideline, Rich Owens for some reason. And I'm like walking down. We sat in these like bleacher seats. I don't even know how it worked. But my uncle was in the military and got some giveaway seats for being in the Marine Corps. And he passed them along to my dad, who took me to this one game ever. Such a strange thing. And I called my dad yesterday. I'm like, you know, that was 28 years ago this week. And he was like, oh, okay. You know,
it was, is that right? Like, how's everything else?
And I just thought it was the coolest thing. Yeah. I'm like, 28 years ago.
So I looked it up. Mine's 38 years ago, almost to the week. November 2nd, 86. They won in overtime against Minnesota. 44-38. How's this for a box score? Tommy Kramer for your Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah.
20-35, so not a great completion percentage. 490-4.
Damn.
490-4.
So you saw a day, too.
I certainly did. Completing passes to a bunch of guys I don't really remember. I don't remember Steve Jordan or Leo Lewis, but those guys had wonderful afternoons. For Washington, Jay Schrader, 24 of 47, the most Jay Schrader line possible. Just throwing fastballs, one speed. 378, 2 tutties. Gary Clark goes for 6 for 123, including the game winner in overtime. Art Monk, 6 for 102. Clint Didier, 5 for 99, please and thank you.
Let's go.
That's a passing game right there, pal.
So I got a 17-yard Frerotte to Westbrook touchdown. Frerotte was my guy, by the way. I've been texting with him to try to get him on this week. It's one of those things where he responds like once every 4 days, and he's like, yeah, that sounds good. And then he's like, let me check something. And then like, so we'll see. We'll try to get him on.
Can you come on Tuesday? Then Wednesday, he's like, yeah, totally. What time?
Exactly. So Frerotte to Westbrook, Terry Allen 1-yard run, and a bunch of Scott Blanton as their field goal kicker. Wow. I know I'm over talking about this. 28 years ago, man. This week, 7-2 Washington. I just went to the game going, man, my football team's pretty good. This happens. Wait till the next year when we're 7-2. Now I'm this, whatever this is. This guy right here.
So, sorry. It sounds like I'm one-upping you. I don't mean to. I was just saying my group that year.
Get back to your thing. Well, I apologize.
Well, they went 12-4 and lost the conference title game to the Giants and won the whole thing.
No, no, no.
And then they did win the Super Bowl the next year.
My team that I'm talking about, they went 2-5 down the stretch and missed the playoffs.
Oh, okay.
And they haven't done anything since.
Yeah.
So it's very similar.
It's almost the same. It's like, it's like blow for blow. They scored, I think it was 21 unanswered to force overtime and then win it in overtime. And then went 12-4 that year, and it's not a big deal.
What's your feel on the Steelers game? Do you like Washington's chances? We'll get into that next. Grant and Danny with you on the Fan. We got Alex Smith coming up in 40 minutes.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Thursday night football tonight, the Bengals at the Ravens. I saw somewhere that the Bengals have traveled to Baltimore for a Thursday night game four straight seasons. I don't know if that's accurate. I didn't bother looking it up, but I saw that somewhere. If that's true, that's ridiculous.
That's wild.
Well, it's crazy, but, you know, it's also unfair.
Right, because, I mean, you're gonna play them twice every year,
yes.
And it's going to be one of the marquee ones, one of the primetime ones. But the fact that it's Thursday four times, I would complain if I was the Bengals.
Yeah, I'm sure they have, probably after the second one and the third one. But just the short week primetime situation, not cool. It's hard enough to go to Baltimore and win.
Mm-hmm.
Washington found that out the hard way a few weeks ago.
Yes, they did.
So on Thursday night especially. The Bengals are 4-5. If they win tonight, Danny, that means they've won two straight and 4 of 5. That means they are 5. They would be, let's see, 5-2 in their last 7 after their 0-3 start. And I think at that point, I would say, as I put my head on my little pillow tonight, they're going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, because you look who's ahead of them, right? So you still have to deal with the Ravens, Texans, Steelers in their own division, Bills, Chiefs. You're not getting a top 2 or 3 seed. But you know who else they'd have to climb over? The Colts and the Broncos. Who do you feel more confident in? If Cincinnati wins tonight, even if they just play well in general, do you feel more confident that the Broncos kind of continue their decent play or that the Colts get right? No, I mean, to me, Cincinnati is in the best position because everybody else below them is garbage. The bottom of the AFC is bad. The top is really good. The bottom, from the Jets on down, it's a bunch of 3-6 and 2-7.
Look at the schedule remaining. If they can beat Baltimore tonight, I know they have the Steelers in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Chargers all of a sudden not a pushover either, by the way.
They're solid.
They're pretty good. You knew Jim Harbaugh was going to have that team playing hard.
Yep.
They're 5-3. They're a playoff caliber team, yeah? But the Chargers into the Steelers, I think that's probably a splittable situation for the Bengals, right? Mm-hmm. This is, again, if they get past Pittsburgh. Then the stretch run, they have a bye week. Dallas, no Dak Prescott. Tennessee, Cleveland, Denver, and you close with Pittsburgh. That four-game stretch there of Cowboys, Titans, Browns, Broncos, they could easily go 3-1, and they could possibly go 4-0. So if you're 5-5, now I got to find another win against Baltimore, one of the Steelers games, the Chargers. And if I go 4-0 in that stretch, I'm a 10-win team. That's playoff stuff.
Yeah, pretty crazy right after their start. I think they could lose tonight and still be in a decent spot. I would take them before tonight over the two teams ahead of them, Denver, whose record's much better, and the Colts. Like, let's say they lost to Baltimore in overtime last time. So let's say you're 4-6. That's not where you want to be, obviously. You know that. I know that. Everybody knows. However, they're still good enough, I think, to rip through that part of the schedule you're talking about. I think they get to 9 wins, win or lose tonight. Regardless, I think 9 wins does it at the back spot of the AFC postseason.
So Denver's 5-4.
Mm-hmm.
They still play the Chiefs twice. Not fun.
Yeah, I think Denver's adorable. That they're cute. They beat 5 bad teams. I think they're giant frauds.
See, I like them more than you do. I do not.
They're defensively, they're good, but
I don't think they're good. But I like them a lot more than to call them frauds. I think they are a fringe playoff team because they're excellent on defense. And while
frauds is too strong.
Bo Nix.
I'm thinking about it. Frauds is too strong.
Yeah,
like they're not as good as. But hey, look at this team's 5-2 coming into the weekend.
They're
or whatever.
Pain in the ass to play.
Yeah,
they beat the Panthers by 2 touchdowns. They beat the Saints by 23 points. They beat the Raiders by 16. Like, they have walloped teams. They beat the Bucks by 19. Remember that?
Yeah, that was
before the Bucks had their injuries.
That's right.
Too.
Yeah,
like, they have some really, really good wins. They got destroyed by the Ravens, which is going to be hard to explain away. They lost a close game to the Chargers in the division. Real tight game to Pittsburgh early in the year. And then a real close game to Seattle. But Chiefs twice. Atlanta, 2 weeks from now, very losable game. They will probably beat the Raiders, Browns, Colts. Let's say you go 2-1 in that stretch. You have to split with the Chargers now. So if I say they win 4 games the rest of the way, that only gets them to 9-7. That's why the Bengals winning tonight gets them to 10.
Oh, it'd be massive. Yeah, I mean, they do play the Bengals at one point, so that may be for that seventh playoff spot later. But yeah, I think the point stands. Like, to me, Cincinnati has always been dangerous. And the talk that you and I had going into that matchup with Washington all the way back in week 3, which seems like eons ago, was they haven't played well yet. Nobody's saying they have. there's still this idea and this energy that they're capable of doing that. And they haven't been consistent. They refused to be for whatever reason. They got waxed by Philadelphia, this Bengals team. And they had a game against Cleveland where, you know, shortly after Washington just destroyed the Browns and showed you how terrible they were, they struggled mightily in that game and barely snuck away with a W against Cleveland. So they haven't really done it yet, right? And that's what's so frustrating.
I will say that that loss the Bengals had to the Ravens the first time they played a few weeks back is a killer for them.
Mm-hmm.
That was the home game where they lost in overtime, where they botched the hold.
That's right.
On a field goal, 41-38. Mm-hmm. They had that game won a couple times over. If they held on in that game and they come into today 5-4, doesn't seem like a big deal. But then you have the potential tiebreaker over the Ravens, and they will have been 5-1 in their last six. Just a game changer to have a split in the season series with Baltimore, with the house money going into tonight of even if you lose, it's a 1-1 season. Whereas now you're at risk of losing both to Baltimore and missing out on a tiebreaker.
And I saw, I think a moment ago, I forgot who had, but I think T. Higgins is probably out tonight.
He's always out.
Yeah.
I mean, he was doubtful as of Tuesday.
Okay.
So I believe that. By the way, that guy is costing himself so much money. There's nothing you can do if you're hurt. I'm not like saying there should be animus or anything, but he got tagged. He's been at odds with the team. I don't know if this is the Davante Adams kind of situation or what. But don't you think if you go into the offseason after 2 years where you missed a lot of time with nagging core and tissue injuries or whatever's going on with him as a receiver, that might cost you a little bit of money based on some question of durability?
This smells to me like a one-year prove-it deal somewhere. You know what I mean? And then maybe try one more time.
I know a place.
What? Where?
I would love T. Higgins. I'm a T. Higgins guy.
I didn't understand when he was coming out, why people weren't interested. He lasts into the second round. I'm going, someone should want this. Someone should say, he'll fit for me.
You know what I think when you watch him? He is not a twitchy guy.
No.
And he's not, there's not like a, I don't know if this is a word that I'm about to make up. Dynamicism? Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Is that actually
dynamicism.
A word?
Dynamicism.
That's not a word, right?
I think it's a word.
He lacks like dynamic traits.
Mm-hmm.
Everything he does, though, is really smooth. He is an SUV. He's not a sports car. And he's big and he's long. And he kind of gets in and out of his brakes, not with twitch or any kind of wiggle, really. But it's like smooth, but he boxes you out. He runs good routes. He's got good hands. He makes contested catches. He's nifty on the sideline with toe drags and stuff. I think he could be an acrobatic kind of contested catch guy as well. I don't know if he's a wide receiver one in a world without Ja'Marr Chase or if he's just a really nice compliment. I think he'd be a really good fit here opposite McLaurin. It would cost a lot of money, and I'm not sure that they're in that market. But I love T. Higgins.
So it looks like dynamism is the word we're thinking of. Dynamicism.
What is...
We said dynamicism.
Yes.
Dynamicism. Yeah, there it is, right there.
So
like
that's
that.
The word.
We had it right, yeah. It's a thing.
What's
it's like,
the definition?
It means you're dynamic. It means you're possessing the attributes
so
of someone that's dynamic.
Dynamicism.
Yes.
Do you agree with that?
100%. So I
think you watch him and it's like nothing sexy. You're not writing anything down to call your scouting director about. But you look up and he's got 8 for 87.
Yeah. To me, he's tall, which you know I can't stop. I can't quit. The big receiver. This is a tall, smooth, good-handed route runner that could absolutely help nearly everybody. I never understood why people seem to just have no interest in that dude. Just goes for 1,000 yards every time he's healthy.
Here's what else I love about him, and this is just my own little thing. This is if I could use my, you know, third-person style, this is just a Grant Paulson take.
Okay, yeah. Okay? What does Grant think?
Look at how he handled his situation, and look at how Ja'Marr Chase has handled his situation. Now, I suppose someone could suggest that he's not actually as hurt as, you know, he's making it out to be, and it's dragging into the season. I don't think that's the case, because I think he would want to be playing. These are the games, this is the whole point. This is why you're in the league. And because he would want to be putting forth production so that he could go get paid. But if you look at, like, some of the press conferences Ja'Marr Chase has had and some of the answers he's had, I mean, he's come off, it's so off-putting. It's just kind of like, hold your nose, like, really? Ah, that's awful. Ja'Marr Chase seems like a pain. T. Higgins has just kind of gone about his business. I don't even know what the guy sounds like. There's never been any interesting press conference that I've seen from him. Like, it just seems like he is a guy that goes about.
Does he tweet emojis a lot?
I don't think he does that a whole lot. It doesn't seem like to me. But he's a good player. He will not be on the field again tonight, though. They're used to it. He has missed most of the season.
I don't have it in front of me, but I just feel like that offense is better when he's doing it.
Oh, you think?
Well, I mean,
when one of their best players is out there?
Well, yeah. Like, I know it's very novel, but it unlocks everything. Like, Jamar Chase is an absolute badass. Everybody knows it. But there's that. You get tired of Chase, then it's Higgins. Then it's back to Chase. You get tired of that, and then it's Higgins. It's like it always seems to be that third down and six, right, where he's making that first down catch and always going beyond the sticks.
I know that a lot of people feel like watching the Ravens in primetime has gotten stale. I still love watching
it's not for me.
Their offense. Their efficiency is on par with the Commanders and nobody else in the league. It's Washington and Baltimore in their own tier. And then a huge gap, and then everybody else in terms of when you're looking at the percentages of drives that go into the red zone. It's two teams that go for a lot of fourth downs, that get a lot of fourth downs. They both have cheat codes on third and short, fourth and short to stay on the field, to avoid punting. In the case of the Ravens, they get to scoring range quicker because Justin Tucker's leg is so big and long. But both of those two teams are in a league of their own right now in terms of offensive efficiency, EPA, expected points added, those types of things.
So here's what's unique for me about watching them. Most of the time when I'm watching a game on TV, I do what everybody else does, right? Like you sort of watch the quarterback and then with kind of an eye towards both maybe any open space that you see to the left or right, depending which way you're going, part of the defense, and then the pass rush. You're watching, you're monitoring the defensive ends and is your guy in any danger, right? That's kind of how we usually watch offense. When Baltimore plays, what I find myself doing is watching the second and third layers of the defense. And here's what I mean by that. They're all sitting there, either flat-footed, sprinting in the wrong direction, or something else on nearly every play. Because if everything is either about a handoff that happens or doesn't, a fake that happens or doesn't, Lamar running or not, and defenses are either flat-footed or flowing in the wrong direction. Like, that's the genius stuff about it. That's what that kind of a weapon allows you to do.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Alex Smith is joining the show in 20 minutes, right at 6 o'clock. We will take our first good look at how the Steelers have been playing lately next on the Fan. G&D on the Fan, the Steelers and Mike Tomlin as underdogs are as scary an opponent as you're going to find. There is not a more profitable head coach over the last quarter century than Tomlin as an underdog. And how about this, Danny? With extra time to prepare for the game, as a team out of the bye week, the Mike Tomlin-led Steelers have been a juggernaut. They are 13-4. After the bye week under Tomlin over these last 17 seasons, and they have won 7 consecutive games out of their bye week. Last week, they were an underdog coming out of the bye against the Rams, and they went to LA and beat them by a touchdown. 13-4, 7 straight out of the bye for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, here is what you know for a Mike Tomlin coach team. They're going to be really well coached. That's up and down. That's always. They get the most out of their group every single time, always. There's never any doubt about that. You could beat them. Teams beat them all the time. I mean, they've finished 9-7, 9-8, right around there for a bunch of years in a row. This year, they obviously have a better record than that. But it's not going to be because they're sloppy. It's not going to be because they don't know what they're doing.
I actually think that the Bears game, which was the last time Washington was playing a really good defense, and one of the only times this year where they've played what I would consider to be a great defense or a top 5, top 10 type defense. I think you would consider that a win for the Commanders offensively. Like we said, we're going to learn a lot about this offense. We'll see how they handle the really good defense. And someone could say, well, before the Hail Mary, they had 12 points and they were awful in the red zone. So, they got exposed a little bit or whatever. I don't believe that. I think process was that they moved the ball all game long, up and down the field. They made chunk yardage plays. 20-20, they were a juggernaut. I don't know where you're at on that, but I believe they had their highest yardage day of the season to that point. And I know they had more yards accumulated than any opponent the Bears had played until that point. So I actually think that if you viewed that Bears game as like a, let's figure out how good this offense really is, I think that went really well for Washington.
I'd say that was it's better than maybe the point total gave you, right? Like, Chicago took a few things away. They made it hard. And Washington still, as you said, was able to move the football significantly. Obviously, the red zone stall out and woes, you know, were the story of the game until the Hail Mary washed everything away and sent everybody on a jubilation ride. But, yeah, I mean, this is – Pittsburgh's a little bit different. I mean, obviously, down in, down out, they can stuff you, right? They'll do a good job, especially up front, limiting some runs and power things. To me, it's the havoc they can create that's different than a lot – than anybody else they'll face, quite frankly. The T.J. Watt off the edge, they just aren't many of those guys. T.J. Watt, Max Crosby, Myles Garrett. Now, they shoved it on Myles Garrett, by the way, against Cleveland. He had zero stats. Name a stat that Myles Garrett had. Zero. There were none. He played in the game. We know that. That was it. He had snap counts. But that ability to pressure and cause panic, rush throws, fumbles, sacks, interceptions, those things, it's the chaos-creating machine of that Pittsburgh defense is what makes you nervous.
I'm just trying to go through this in my head. I think they may have... So far, Washington's played one defense ranked in the top 15 in yards per play, which seems crazy to me. Because the Bears, by the way, with the Washington game and the Arizona game where they got dominated, have gone from ranking 5th to like 16th.
Oh, they got bumped out, yeah.
Over 2 weeks. So stop me when you hear a team that Washington's played. Jets, Broncos, Titans, Texans, Eagles, Chargers, Chiefs, Vikings, Bengals. Mm. There's the first.
Bengals.
Ninth. By the way, when they played them, that defense was awful.
Oh, they were horrendous.
Okay. Now let's keep going. Raiders, 49ers, Packers, Dolphins, Falcons, Bears. That's 16th.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty crazy to me.
Yes, it is.
That means Washington, as of right now, has played one defense, the Bengals, in the top 10, or in this case, in the top 15 in the NFL in yards per play. So this is just the most basic, how good of a defensive team are you? And when they played Cincinnati in week 3, they were ranked in the bottom 5, I believe, at that time. The next team you get to after Chicago, by the way, Buffalo, would be Cleveland at 18. That's why I can't wait for Sunday, because the Steelers, 10th in yards per play, they are 4th against the run, which is the strength for Washington. They're much more mediocre, 16th against the pass, but they're top 3 in picking off passes.
Yeah, they'll turn you over.
They're 4th in not allowing first downs. Like, they're awesome on third down. Awesome is strong. I think they're 11th now, but for much of the year, they were in the top 5 to 7. This is kind of a good against good matchup. They're also number 1 in the red zone defensively. How much have we talked about Washington's red zone offense?
Yep.
They're number 6th in goal to go, so... You're about to get tested against a Super Bowl caliber type defense right now.
Yeah, the rushing part of this is what's going to fascinate me in terms of the nuances of the game. You know how good that pass defense is. Maybe not necessarily, again, down in and down out. They'll give up some things, but in the name of creating chaos. Like, that's ultimately what they're going for, is you getting in bad down and distance, then we can have our guys tee off on the outside, and they just added Preston Smith to the mix, which is so fun. Anyway, but you look at that rushing part of it, there's always this sort of push and pull with players. I mean, we talked to, you know, multiple Cy Young winner Max Scherzer about this. We talked to, you know, some of the great pitchers that have come through here and otherwise. If the scouting report says, great fastball hitter, do you care about that? Or have they seen your fastball? Or is it, hey, you know what? They're great at this. Let's do something else. Like, that all depends. It depends on your bulldog mentality. It depends on how you trust your secondary stuff that day. So it's a similar quandary for Cliff Kingsbury and company. You're going, our rush offense is awesome, objectively. Well, this is a really good rush defense. Do we still do it because we know we can win there? Or do we maybe look elsewhere for some of our easy, cheap yards on early downs? That's the chess match.
Grant and Danny on the fan. Alex Smith, who played here in Washington, now an analyst at ESPN, joins us next on G&D.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week. with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.